Okay, good morning, everyone. We resume a new season of Parshas HaShavua, starting with Parshas Lech Lecha. And again, as we start the new Parshios, we bring the Avos, we bring the patriarchs with us into our lives. And we begin with the discussion of the tests of Avram Avinu. And again, just to overview it briefly, the beginning of the Parsha where Hashem tells Avram to leave his birthplace of Haran, and he goes to the land of Canaan, and after going to the land of Canaan, there's a hunger in the land, and therefore Avram goes down to Mitzrayim, and when he's in Mitzrayim, his wife is taken captive, she is rescued from Hashem, they return back to Eretz Yisrael. Avram's a wealthy man, him and Lot get into an argument, and Lot ends up going to Sodom, and Avram continues preaching about God to the rest of the world. And Hashem makes various promises with him. And then we come to the part where we're going to do most of the focus today, is the great World War One and Two between the four kings and the five kings, which Avram is victorious with. Then we're told the story with the covenant between the parts where Hashem promises to Avram that the Jewish people will go down to Egypt but will eventually come back and they will have Eretz Yisrael. Then we're told about the fact that Sarah can't have any children, and she suggests that Avram should marry Hagar, the maidservant, and they get married, and then Hagar gets pregnant, and she becomes a little bit arrogant, and Sarah chases her out of the house. The angels talk to Hagar and tell her to go back and to subjugate herself to Sarah, which she does. She gives birth to Yishmael, and then when Yishmael is 13, Hashem tells Avram to circumcise himself and Yishmael, which he does. And that's the general overview of Parshas Lech Lecha. So I want to start with a couple of questions right in the beginning, and then I want to move into the main part of the story. Two questions we can start with. When Hashem says to Avram, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, go leave your land, Miladcha, your birthplace, in Beis Avicha, in the house of your father, to the land which I will show you. Now, this is considered one of the 10 tests of Avram, to leave his land. So the rabbis ask a question, what kind of a test is this? Usually you get a test, you know, it's pretty hard to do it, and, you know, you're not necessarily getting a lot of benefit from it. But in the very next pasuk, Hashem says, listen, if you're going to leave your birthplace, look what I'm going to do for you. V'eschol agoy gadol, I'm going to make you into a great big nation. You have lots of descendants. V'avarechecha, and I will bless you. You're going to be wealthy. Your name is going to be great and fantastic. And you'll become a blessing. People will want to bless their children to be like you. And those who bless you, I will bless those who bless you, I'll curse those who curse you, etc., etc. Wonderful things. So what kind of test is that? That's an opening question. Second question is, so what does it say? Avram went as Hashem told him. Lot went with him. And then it says, V'Avram ben chameshanim v'shivim shana b'tzeisim acharon. Avram was 75 years old when he left Haran. So the question is, why does he have to tell us how old he was? What does it matter? Does it make any difference how old he was? So when we come to the end of the class, we'll come back to these two questions. Then you know we're at the end of the class. Okay? But now what I want to do is focus primarily on chapter 14, and that's what the handout has. And we're going to discuss the war between the four kings and the five kings. And how this fits in to the entire Parsha, and what this has to do with Avram, and all the issues involved over here. So, before we look inside to our sources, the four or five psukim that we're dealing with over here, the Torah tells us in chapter 14, it wasn't the days of Amraphel, the king of Shinar, Arioch, Kedor Laomer, and Tidal, four kings. These are four kings who lived east of Eretz Yisrael, somewhere, I guess, around the area of Iraq. They made a war with five kings who lived in the land of Canaan, predominantly the king of Sodom and the king of Amorah, together with other kings. They gathered in a certain place near where the present Dead Sea is found. They had a battle, and the four kings defeated the five kings, and they subjugated them for 12 years. Made them pay taxes, whatever. Then, afterwards, the Canaanite nation said, that's enough of this. And now we were going to rebel. So they rebelled for 13 years until finally the four kings decide it's time to come back and teach them a very big lesson. So, in other words, the first war was World War I, and 13 years later was World War II. And you basically have four kings against five kings, the major powers of the world, the powers of the East versus the powers of the land of Canaan. These are the major powers. So the Torah then tells us, it's okay, so in the 14th year, they decide we're going to do something about this. So as they're traveling from their eastern location till they make the land of Canaan, there's a number of other, we'll say, neutral countries who are involved with this. And they start telling us what they were doing. So on the way to the major battle, it says they struck the Rephaim, who were in Ashras Karnaim. They struck down the Zuzim, who were in Ham. They struck down in Ham. They struck down the Amim, who were in another place. The Chorates in another place. And a whole bunch of places, a whole bunch of mini skirmishes, mini battles. They struck all the terror of the Amalekites, etc., etc. And then finally, when we get to Pasuk Tess, it says finally again that the Pasuk Ches and Tess, they finally come out to meet Sodom and Amorah, the four kings versus the five. So the first question is, if this is mainly a battle between the four kings and the five kings, why are we told about all the other issues? Why are they fighting other kings? Why are they conquering other nations on the way? Just go to the five kings. That's your main business. Why were they conquering ones on the other way? That's the first point. But now let's look inside Pasuk Yud. So I've got in your handout the first five psukim. The first year has the five psukim over here. And we'll look at it pasuk by pasuk to see what we have over here. There's plenty of handouts if people need. So Pasuk Yud says the following. The Emek HaSidim, the place where the battle took place, was in the valley of Sidim. Be'eros, Be'eros, Chemor. They were full of bitumen wells. Meaning to say, there was like sinkholes or what quicksand. There's a lot of quicksand in this area. Vayanusu melech Sodom v'Amora, the king of Sodom and Amora, they ran away. Obviously, they lost the battle immediately. Vayiplu shom, and they fell there. Vanishorm, and the others, Heronosu, they ran away to the mountains. So what is going on over here? So if you look in the second source, Rashi says, let me see it in my Rashi over here. It says there were a lot of sinkholes over there. They would take a lot of mud from this area in order to build. And then we get the Agadic message. The Agadic message says that the clay was sticky and a miracle took place for the king of Sodom. What happens? And that he emerged from there. What was going on? It seems that the king of Sodom, he ran away and he fell into this quicksand. And he was sinking. He was going to die. He couldn't get out of the quicksand. And the Torah is hinting that a miracle happened. God performed a miracle on his behalf. Why? He survived. So Rashi brings down, because there were among the nations some who did not believe that Avram was rescued from the fiery furnace of Ur Kasdim. You know, earlier, Avram was thrown into the fiery furnace by Nimrod, as we'll talk more about, and he walked out unscathed. And I'm sure this was not something that Nimrod put into the big newspapers, that everybody should know that Avram was saved. So there was this word out there that Avram was saved, and a lot of people said, I don't believe it. So there's doubt as to whether Avram was saved. So therefore, they didn't believe it. So now, since this one, the king of Sodom, got out of the pit, now that we see that a miracle happened to this king of Sodom, so they retroactively believed in the miracle that took place for Avram. Then said, you see, there's a miracle that happened for the king of Sodom, so must be as well, there's a miracle that happened for Avram, and now we believe the miracle that happened with Avram. That's what Rashi brings down. So the commentaries have a lot of problems with that. You know, it wasn't, you know, the issue wasn't so much did a miracle happen to Avram, or did a miracle not happen? The real issue between Avram and the rest of the world is there a monotheistic God? Is there one God, or is there not one God? And Hashem, and what happened? Avram was fighting with Nimrod. He says, I don't believe in the God of fire. I believe in Hashem. Hashem saved him. The issue wasn't so much did Avram emerge from the furnace alive, as much as the issue, there's a one God in the world who saved him. That was the real issue. Do you believe in one God or not? So now that Nimrod survived, that the king of stone survives. In fact, he survives. That's not going to reinforce the idea that there's one God in this world. The ones who don't accept what Abram says is still not going to accept it. They're going to say, you know what? You know, however Nimrod got out, maybe there's some God or something, there's a power out there that saved Nimrod. So okay, so there was some power that saved you too. That's not going to prove that there's one God. They believed in many gods. So the God of the sinkholes saved the king of Sodom today, and the God of the fire saved Avram the years before. So how is the fact that the king of stone emerges alive, that was miraculous? The non-Jews of the world didn't believe there weren't any miracles. Of course there can be miracles. There's all kinds of powers. The real issue is there one God who's in control of the whole world or not? The fact that the king of stone emerges from this doesn't enhance Avram's position that there's one God in this world. So how? So therefore, why did God do this miracle if it really doesn't make sense what Rashi is saying, that this would prove that everyone would believe the fact that Avram survived the fiery furnace? Okay, that's another question. Let's move on to the next pasuk. Pasuk Yud Aleph, still looking at that first source, reading along. So what happens? So now what do the victors do? Vayikhu es kol rechush Sodom v'Amora. They take all the loot from Sodom and Amora. Ves kol ochlam ve'elechu. They take all their food and they go. Pasuk Yud Beis. Now you have to read this pasuk carefully now. Vayikhu es lot. And they take lot. And then what does it say? Ve'es rechusho. And his possessions. Ben Achi Avram, the son of the brother Avram, Vayelechu, and they went. Vuhu Yoshev Bastom, and he was living in stone. You look at that pasuk, it doesn't read properly. What does the pasuk say? They took Lot and his possessions, the nephew of Avram. Okay, if you were writing the pasuk, how would you write those three clauses? In what order?
First Lot, then the nephew, and then...
Yes, they took Lot, the nephew of Avram, and his possessions. Clearly, that's what it should have said. So why is this being reversed? So that's a major question. That's a major question. Let's continue. Pasuk Yud Gimel. But the fact Lot was captured, because since he moved to Sodom, so he was involved in the battle, he got captured. He was a, you know, innocent bystander who got caught in the action, and he was a wealthy man, so they captured him. I guess they captured many people, and they captured him. Okay. Yud Gimel. Pasuk 13. Vayavu ha-palit, the palit comes, they call in English the fugitive, the escapee. Somebody from the battle was able to come back. The rabbis tell us that this is Og, the giant Og. Vayageid la-Avram ha-Ivri, he tells Avram what happened, that obviously his nephew got captured. Vushochem be'ilene Mamre ha-Mori, and Avram now is living in the plains of Mamre of the Amori. Achi Eshkol, the brother of Eshkol, Vachin Oner, the brother of Oner, you have three guys, Mamre, Eshkol, and Oner, Vehem Bali Bis Avram, and they are allies with Avram. Okay, one more pasuk, Yud Dalid, Vayishma, one second, let's do the Rashi on pasuk 13. Why did this Og tell Avram that Lot was captured? Why did Og tell Lot, Avram, that Lot was captured? So Rashi tells us in Pasuk 13 that Og intended that Avram would be killed attempting to rescue Lot, and he would marry Sarah.
Is that the same Og that was...
The same giant, Og, that Moshe killed.
That survived the...
The flood, yes. So now, what's Rashi saying? Og did not have the most honorable intentions of telling Avram about this. The reason he told Avram was for ulterior motives. He wanted Avram to die in the battle, so he could marry Sarah, who's a very beautiful woman. So now, there's a question that has to be asked at this point in the game. And that is, how could Og be so certain that Avram is going to go and try to save Lot? How could he be so certain that he's going to do this? I give you a number of reasons why Avram wouldn't want to do it. Number one, Lot was not a very good guy. What do I mean to say? We know that as long as Lot was with Avram, he was such a negative influence that Hashem did not speak prophecy to Avram the entire time. When Hashem spoke to Avram to leave the land of Canaan, when he went to Canaan, and when they went down to Egypt, and they came back from Egypt, all that time, Hashem didn't speak to Avram. Why? Because he was hanging around in Russia, Lot. After they get into this quarrel, and Lot leaves, and Hashem speaks to Avram. So what do you see? That Lot wasn't any great guy, as the story continues to tell us. He wasn't a wonderful guy. Number one. So who is Lot that Avram should have to go to try to save his life? Number two, how large were the armies of the four kings? The Medrash says, I don't know if it's an exact number, but certainly, if it's to be taken literally, but certainly to say there was an enormous army. The Medrash says they had, the armies had 2.6 million soldiers. That's a lot of soldiers. That's a huge, huge army. The Medrash says only three times in the history of the world where there's so many soldiers at one time in battle. And this was one of them. And Sancheriv, when he dispersed the 10 tribes, had 2.6 million. And the war of Gog and Magog, which is or will happen, also has that. That's an immense army. You know, and Avram, what does Avram have in terms of an army? He hasn't got very much at all, as we'll see. So the question is, how could Og be so certain that Avram is going to go for the bait? That he's trying it. Now, the fact of the matter is, as we continue now in Pasuk Yud Dalet, he was right though. Pasuk Yud Dalet, Vayishma Avram ki nishba achiv. Avram hears that his brother has been captured. Vayorek es chanichav. He arms his disciples. Yelidei Beiso, those who were raised in his house. How many did he get? Shmona Aser Shoshmeos. He gathers 318 troops. Vayirdef Adon and runs until dawn. So, we do see that Avram does go for this. So now we have to understand, we would definitely call this pikuach nefesh, wouldn't we? Wouldn't we say that person is taking a risk at his life? And not just a risk at his life, it's like, how do you plan on surviving this? And he's risking his life for who? For Lot? Since when is Lot worth it? Right? How is Lot worth it? What does Lot bring to the Jewish people that makes it worth it for him? Right? So why is he doing this? More than that, why is Lot called? It says Kinishba Achiv, his brother is captured. He wasn't his brother. A relative, but not his brother. Why is he called a brother? More than that, if we look at the fourth source, Rashi over there says, was it indeed 318 people? So Rashi says it was not even 318 people. It was just one person, Eliezer his servant. And Eliezer, if you take the word Eliezer, Aleph, Lamed, Yud, Ayin, Zayin, Reish, if you count it up, the gematria, numerical value of Eliezer is 318. He was like 318 people. So it comes out, he only took Eliezer. So really, it's not even like 318 already. It's just him and Eliezer. So this is like crazy, A. B, if you're already doing this, you know, then why does he even bother taking Eliezer? How much is it? He has a better chance now? Oh, now it's 2 against 2.6 million. I'll take on 1.3 million. You'll take on 1.3 million. Well, what's he even taking Eliezer for? If you think you're going to win, you don't need Eliezer, right? And if you think you're going to lose, you don't need Eliezer. Right? It's not that Eliezer is the tipping point. Another question. Wait a minute. Who else would you have thought would have come that surely should have come? We just said, a pasuk before, he had three allies. Oner, Eshkol, and Mamre. They were allies. They made a covenant. Where are the allies? That Avram's going alone on this? All very difficult to understand. All difficult to understand. So what happens? So indeed, we continue. So he goes with Eliezer. And verse 15 tells us that he chased against these people and he hit them very hard. And he reached a certain point, not far from Damascus, where he was quite victorious. And what happens then, he defeats the enemies, he brings back all the spoils, and he brings back Lot, his brother, and his possessions. He returns everything back. Everything's back. And in verse 17, I'm saying this outside, then the king of Sodom comes out to Avram, after he killed Kedorlaomer, etc., etc. So why is the king of Sodom coming out to him? And then finally, Pasuk Yud Ches, and Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalom, comes and brings him some wine, and he's a high priest, and he blesses him, and says, "Bless you, Avram," etc., etc. And then the king of Sodom comes out, and as he says to him, the king of Sodom says, "Listen, Avram, give me all my citizens of Sodom, for rechush kachloch, and take all the loot. The loot that you got that was taken from us, I'll let you keep it." What does Avram answer? Avram says, "Harimosi yodi el Hashem kelyon. I raise my hand up to the God who is on high. Kone shemayim v'aretz, the one who owns the heavens and the earth. Imichut v'atzrochna atzrochna, that not even as much as a thread to a shoe strap. V'meka mikol ashelach, if I take anything from you, I'm not going to take anything. V'lo somer, you shouldn't get to say, 'Ani hasharti es Avram, I made Avram rich.' I don't want you to think that you made me rich. Except what my soldiers had to eat. Okay, that they're going to have. And a few other minor details. But the wealth he doesn't want. Okay, he doesn't take anything from him." So now, this is not consistent. Avram is not being consistent. Why is Avram not being consistent? So it seems Avram doesn't take any presents, right? So there's a big problem with this. Let's go back to the first story of this week's parsha. There was a hunger in the land. It's very interesting. Just Agav, a beautiful insight I saw today. Let me just see where the pasuk is. In pasuk Vav, it says like this: when Avram leaves, as Hashem tells him, it says, "Vayetzu lalechas arza Kenaan." They go to leave to the land of Kenaan. "Vayavo arza Kinoan," and they come. And they came to the land of Kinoan. So, first of all, it's a little bit unusual. That's very redundant pasuk. They went to go to Canaan, and they came to Canaan. That's redundant. More than that, the first time the word Canaan is pronounced Kinaan, and then the second time it's pronounced Kinoan in the same pasuk. Why is the letters changed? So, one simple answer is that's a grammar rule. It's a grammar rule. Whenever you have a word at the end of a pasuk, the cantillation forces us to change a little bit of the pronunciation. For example, you have the word Mitzrayim and Mitzroyim. At the end of it, it's called Mitzrayim. So Canaan is Canaan. Okay, that's a technical answer. But something I always say, there's a deep message over here. They went out to the land of Canaan. Canaan, the nun, it was spelled with an A is a patach. A patach. It's called a patach. What does patach mean? What does patach mean? Open. They came to the land of Canaan hoping that everything would open up for them. You know, everything's going to be great. Hashem said, "I'm going to bless you, I'm going to this, I'm going to that." They go to the land of Canaan, a patach. Everything's going to open up in front of us. And guess what? Vayavo arza Canaan. They came to the land of Canaan. When they got there, it was Canaan. The awe is what? Is a komatz. What does komatz mean? Komatz from kmitza was closed, was tight-fisted. One little, half a little mark. You can see what the Torah is saying. They went to go to the land of Canaan. It's going to be wide open. All the blessings. Hashem said there's blessings and this and that. All these things. And what happens when they come? They see it's Canaan. It's a koma. It's close. Oh, it's not. It's close. Nothing's going to happen. As you soon see that there's a hunger in the land. Be that as may. I couldn't resist saying that little word. But, so they come down to Canaan. And guess what? As soon as he's in Canaan, he travels a little bit. All of a sudden, there's a tremendous hunger in the land. Tremendous hunger in the land. So Avram has to go down to Mitzrayim. He's going to Mitzrayim. As he goes down to Mitzrayim, he realizes, for the first time in his life, or at this point at least, that Sarah's a beautiful woman. And he's concerned at what's going to happen. The Egyptians are going to kill him and marry Sarah. So what does he say? "Say you're my sister. Say you're my sister, and you will live, and I will live on account of you. Laman yitav li, so it'll be good for me on your account, and my soul will live," right? And what does Rashi say on those words? "It'll be good for me. Yitnu li matanos." They're going to give me gifts. They're going to give me gifts. And indeed, that's what happens. As he comes down to Mitzrayim, they did good things for her. For him, they gave him gifts. Paro gave him gifts. what is the idea? So Avram's plan was, just so you don't think he's just throwing his wife away, Avram says like this, I'm going to say you're my sister, and I'm going to say you're a very special person, and anybody who wants the dowry, wants to marry you, I'm going to give an exorbitant amount of a dowry that I'm going to demand, that nobody can afford to pay. No, I'm going to, $10 billion if you want my sister. Right? So what's going to happen? Everyone's going to show how much they like him. They're going to give him gifts, to butter him up, and this and that. And Avram's saying, you see, I'm going to get some money. I'm going to get some stuff. And that's not bad. But I'm going to hold on. I'm not going to give you away. I'm going to say, it's not enough. People will bid on you. This one's going to bring 10 donkeys. This is going to bring 50 cows. Listen, I'm a proper suitor. They're going to give me gifts. I'm going to have all these gifts. That's going to be good for me. But I'm never going to give you away because this is not enough. Anyway, whatever his plan was, didn't work because the king just takes him anyway without any bargaining. Right? And then what happens? Hashem plagues Paro, plagues everybody. So they know that Sarah wasn't touched. And then at the end, Paro says, you know, why didn't you tell me what happened? He says, well, I could. I was afraid, whatever. You know, just go. And then Paro sends him out. Okay. So now, how does Avram leave that story? So Pasuk Aleph says, in the next, now you have in source 6, chapter 13, it says, Vayal Avram Mitzrayim. Avram came up from Mitzrayim. Hu ve'ishto, him and his wife. V'chol ha'shol, everything that belonged to him. V'lot imo ha'negba, and lot with him in the south. V'Avram kaved ma'od, and Avram is very heavy. V'mikna b'kesev zov, with cattle, with silver, and gold. He's a rich man. So when you look at this story, does Avram refuse gifts? Not only does he refuse gifts, he was planning on getting gifts. He's going down to Mitzrayim. He says to Sarah, listen, say you're my sister, so it'll be good for me. And Rashi will be good for me, they're going to give me gifts. And indeed, Paro, it was good for him when he came. They gave him gifts. And he said, no, I don't want any gifts. He said, I don't want any gifts. Okay, maybe you're going to say, well, he's playing along. Because part of the saving is to play along. I'll take the gifts. It's like I'm the rich guy, this and that. So by taking the gifts, it'll save your life. Maybe. But then when Paro finds out the real story, that he is the husband, and lets them go, then I'm going to say, okay, you know, nice to have your gifts back. Oh, false pretense. Just give it back. Obviously, so what's going on? Does Avram like to take gifts, or does he not want to take gifts? That's a major question that the commentaries ask. All right? So these are all the many questions we have. Again, to review all the questions so we can remember them all. First of all, what is the test of Avram? If Hashem is promising him all these wonderful things when he leaves, if he leaves, what kind of test is it? Number two, why does it mention that Avram is 75 years old? Number three, why did the four kings bother attacking other nations along the way when they're coming back to attack the five kings? How does the saving of the king of Sodom reinforce Avram's position that there's only one God by the fact that he was saved from the fiery furnace? Why does the Torah do the wrong order and says they captured Lot and his possessions and then say Avram's nephew, Avram's brother? Why do they call Lot his brother when he's not his brother? How did Og know Avram would be willing to risk his life? And why indeed did Avram risk his life? Why didn't the three allies join Avram? Why did the king of Sodom come later to greet him? And why does he not take anything from the king of Sodom, and now he does take things from the king of Egypt? These are all the questions, a whole bunch of questions, but they're all going to be answered in a very simple way. So to understand this, we want to bring down a fundamental lesson that we learned from Avram that's very practical for us. It's going to take a little bit of time to develop, but it's not hard at all. It's a very easy class today. And what we can learn from this. We know that Avram, at a certain age in his life, came to the understanding there is a creator. He lived in a world that did not believe that there is a monotheistic God. He came to this understanding. Some say it was at the age of 3. Others say it was at the age of 48. Whatever it is. But Avram himself understood that there has to be a creator. And he went through a lot of philosophical discussions. First he saw that the sun was the king, the creator, because it's up there. But then he saw the sun went down. Then the moon comes, that's the moon. But then the sun comes up, so it can't be the sun, can't be the moon. He's having all these questions. So he finally comes to the point to realize that there has to be a God. So the Or Sameach commentary, the Meshech Chochma commentary from Meir Simcha Devinsk makes a very interesting analysis. And I should have put it in here somewhere. Did I put it in here somewhere? Yes, source number 5. Source number 5. At the Bris Bein Abesorim, when Hashem made the covenant of the parts between Avram, and it mentions, it says, and so the sun set and it was very dark. Now, what word does the Torah use for the sun? It calls it the Shemesh. The Shemesh. So the Meshech Chachma asks, he says, you know, this is the first time in the history of the Torah that the sun is called the Shemesh. What was it called before? What was the sun called in the beginning of creation? Or is not a complete answer, half correct. Well, didn't have a lot of times to be Maver Sedra Bracious, only had one day. It's called the Or HaGadol, the big light. That's what I'll call it, the big light. One created two Me'orot, and one was called the Mor HaGadol, the big light. Because that's what it is, it's a big light. All of a sudden, now, in this week's Parsha, it's called the Shemesh. So, why did the translation change? And what does the word Shemesh mean? So the Meshech Chachma says, or Meir Simcha Levin says, because he says it was only now called the Shemesh because Avram taught the world about God. Now, what does the word Shemesh mean in Aramaic and even in Hebrew? Let's do another word that's similar to that. On Hanukkah, we have something called the Shamash. The Shamash. Right? That extra one on top. What does that mean? What does the word Shamash mean? It's a Shamash. What's a Shamash? That's what it means. Shamash means a servant. To serve. The Shamash. To serve. That's what the Shamash does. It serves. It lights the other candles. Until Avram came along, everybody said that the sun was a Mor HaGadol, was a big light. Meaning to say, it was a god. It was so powerful, it was a god. Look what it can do. Even if it's 93 million miles away, it can heat the earth, it can do all kinds of things, it brings light, photosynthesis. They knew more about the sun than any scientist today knows about the sun. And that's why they were so amazed by what the sun can do. And they attributed godly qualities to it. It must be a god. It's the Mor HaGadol. But now, as we come to the Bris Bein Abesorim, when Avram has already come to this understanding what God is, so Hashem refers, the Torah refers to the sun, not as the Mor HaGadol, but it's the Shemesh. It is the servant. And the servant set. And in other words, teaching us what Avram was able to bring to the world. That there is a creator of the world, and the most powerful thing that you could see in creation. Well, I have to ask you, what's the most powerful thing that God created in this entire universe from our perspective? It's the sun, isn't it? Imagine where we would be without the sun. Yeah, without the moon, okay, the tides might wreak havoc, but we'd still be around. Without the sun, we're finished. Mamish, we're dead. So that's the most powerful thing God created. And that's why you can see why the world worships the sun. Because it's so powerful. But Avram said, everything in this world, if there is a creator, then everything in this world has a purpose. And that is really the last Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos, which teaches us all about the ethics and morality. The last line of Pirkei Avos says, Kol ma shebara kodesh baruch hu ba'olamo, whatever Hashem created in his world, lo bara el lechvodo. He only created it for his honor. That's it. Whatever is created in this world is for his honor. As the Pasuk says, Kol hanikra bishmi, everything that's called in my name, velichvodi barasif, and I created for my honor. Everything in this world is created for one purpose, to scream out and say there is a God in this world. That's what the purpose of the whole world is. And Avram was the first human being in his time to come to understand that. So much so that even the sun, the most powerful thing in the world, he says, you're only a shamash. You're only a servant. You're not more than that. And if that's what the sun is, then frankly, that's what everything else in this world is as well. Now, Avram, once he understood this, it wasn't enough for him. And parenthetically, that's why when it's called Pirkei Avos, the ethics of the fathers, so one of the Forshim say that everything in Pirkei Avos, every single thing in Pirkei Avos, you can trace it to the behaviors of the Avos of the patriarchs. Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, everything, their lives, every statement in Pirkei Avos, you can learn it from the Avos. That's what the Avos taught us. Everything about Pirkei Avos. So when you're learning the whole Pirkei Avos, now you come to the last line of Pirkei Avos. So what's it all about? At the end of the day, what's it all about? You know what it's all about? Everything God created in the world was for His honor. That's it. And who taught us that? The Avos. Avram Avinu taught us this. It's so important, this idea that everything Hashem created in this world is for His honor. Therefore, the Mishnah Berurah explains in the very first halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, the very first words of the code of Jewish law is what? The first thing. Yizgaber ke'ari, a person should get up early like a lion, la'amot, to get up, baboker the morning, la'avodas baro, to serve as the Creator. That's the first halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Get up like a lion. And the Mishnah Berurah explains why. Mishnah Berurah says, ki lekach nivra, because that's why you were created. Because the Torah says, the same verse that we ended Pirkei Avos with, everything that's called in my name for my honor was created. So before you want to live like a Jew, before you want to know to put on tefillin, to how to wash your hands in the morning, everything you want to do as a Jew, the first thing the Shulchan Aruch says, you got to get up like a lion to serve your Creator. Why did I get up like a lion? Because that's what you were created for. You're created for one reason, to serve your Creator, to be a servant, to be a shamish. That's what you are. The son is a shamish. The greatest thing you could be is a shamish to Hashem, a servant to Hashem. That's why Hashem created you. Why? Because to bring His glory into this world, that's why you were created. And now it has to start somewhere. So it starts with Avram Avinu. Now this sounds simple, but it's not so simple, as you'll see in a minute. So now Avram understands that what I do, if I understand that there is a Creator, and everything in this world is here to reflect that, and therefore serve the Creator, because that binds me with the Creator, right? So now everything I do has to be for the sake of the Creator. Which, you know, now that we have thousands of years of Jewish philosophy behind us, is well known. But for him to teach that to the whole world, that everything I do for this world is for the purpose of the Creator and not for my purpose at all. This is what the first step of Judaism is. Once you come to the understanding there's a Creator, what does it matter if there's a God in the world or not? You know what it means? The first thing means that whatever I do, I'm just a shamash. I'm just a servant, and it's my greatest pleasure to be a servant of the Creator, because that binds me up with the Creator. And that is the whole purpose of my life. And that has to, therefore, as every Jew learns this parsha, says, this is what I have to learn, is why I do what I do. I ask, why do you put on tefillin? Why do you keep kosher? Why do you do all these things? For one reason, to bestow honor upon my Creator. My life is worthless without any attachment to God. Who would I represent as God? And I have to represent Him in the best way possible. That's the only reason Hashem put me in this world. If you understand that, it makes life a lot easier. So now Avram was not satisfied with this knowledge himself. He wanted to share it with others. It's such a profound idea. And he was such a lover of mankind. If you understand the greatest secret to life, you want to share this with other people. Because he was a man of kindness. And if you have the elixir of life, wouldn't you share it with everybody else? So Avram shares with everybody else. And there's all kinds of stories that we all know that I don't have to repeat. These stories you all learned when you were little children. Remember, his father was an idol worshiper. His father, Terah, was an idol worshiper. Right? And when he ever put Avram in charge of the store, what happened? People come into the store and Avram would drive away business. He'd ask people, how old are you? He says, what does it matter? Just tell me. I'm 40 years old. He says, you're 40 years old. Why are you serving an idol that my father made 2 weeks ago? And the guys go running out. One day, Avram took all the idols and smashed it to bits and took an axe and put it in the hand of one of the idols. And the father comes in and says, the whole place is destroyed. He says, what's going on? What happened? So there's a big fight with the idol. Somebody brought in a gift, and the idols fought over it. And this guy won. He says, are you crazy? You know, idols can't do anything. So father, listen to what you're saying. If they can't do anything, why are you doing what you're doing? says, I can't take that insubordination, and they bring him to Nimrod. Remember, Terach was the number two man in the world. There was Terach, and his right-hand man was, there was Nimrod, and his right-hand man was Terach. Takes him to Terach, and Terach says, you know, I believe in the God of fire. Why do you believe in God? He says, listen, you know, I believe there's a creator who created the fire. He says, listen, what's wrong with fire? Is there anything better than fire? He says, listen, water can put out the fire. So he says, okay, then serve the water. He says, well, then he goes through a whole rigmarole. He says, well, the clouds, they make the rain. They have that. So you serve the clouds. He says, what about the wind? The wind pushes the clouds. Okay, serve the wind. Then Aaron says, yeah, but Hashem makes the wind. So you have to serve my God. So Terah, Nimrod says, don't confuse the issue with facts. I believe in the God of fire. If you're so great, your God going to save you from the fire? And he throws him into the fire. Throws him into the fire and he miraculously lives. Big Kiddush Hashem. Now, you can be sure that Nimrod did not want that to be advertised by many people. And he didn't want to spread all this news of this miraculous salvation from that. But, you know, life went on. Now, Avram, so you see that Avram, he's trying to bring God into this world. So let's come back now. So we talk about the hunger. Avram now goes to the land of Canaan. Avram was, first of all, successful where he was in Ur Kasdim doing kiruv to people, teaching people. Sometimes you gotta leave. Okay, goes to Canaan. Things don't work out so well in Canaan. So now let's see a very important Rashi in source number 7. So the Torah tells us that after he came back from Mitzrayim, all right, in the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel, it says in Pasuk Gimel, Vayelech l'masav, he went on his travelings, on his journeys, Minega from the south, Ad Beiskel, until he reached the place where his tent was originally. So there is a very important Rashi. Rashi says, why does it say he went on his journeys? So Rashi says, when he returned from Mitzrayim, the land of Canaan, he went and stayed in the same hotels he stayed on the way down. On the way down, he had to stay in certain hotels. So on the way back, he stayed in the same hotels. To teach you what? To teach you Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz, Meshlech Chait. You go to a certain hotel, you stay with the same hotel. Second answer Rashi brings, and from the Medrash says, B'chazaraso para hakafasov. When he returned, he paid back all the debts he had. He paid back all the debts. What do you mean he paid all the debts? Well, let's figure out. He left because there was a hunger in the land. So let's play this out. He leaves Eretz Yisrael. It's about at least a week journey by foot or whatever to go down to Egypt. So he stays in a hotel. He comes to the hotel. What happens? He says, you got any money? What are the room rates? No, he goes to the Hilton. The Hilton, Be'er Sheva Hilton. The room rates are $500 a night. I ain't got the money. Get out. So where does he go? He goes to a place, an Arab, the flea bag tent hotel, you know, $29.99 a night. So Avram goes there. I said, okay, it'll be credit card or cash. I said, I ain't got no money. You have to trust me. So okay, I guess those hotels don't get a lot of business anyway. So okay, they trusted him. So he goes to 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 hotels the whole time. Never paid. Now that Paro, he comes back a rich man. He goes back to those hotels to pay back. So let's try to understand exactly what's going on over here. And now you see, this is now how Avram thinks about this. How would we think about it? Okay, let's say I was this person, that I had to go travel to these all flea bag hotels, right? Okay, and I have a debt to pay, right? So now, what would I do on the way back? What would you do on the way back? Now that you're a multi-billionaire, you can go to the flea bag hotel, not even one star, right? You can go to the Hilton. For sure you can go to the Hilton, right? Why not? I can afford it. What about these places? I'll send a check. I'll send a courier. 29, I'm not going to be a gun if Chas V'Shalom. I'll send a courier. What am I going to buy this? I'll send a courier. $20.99 to this hotel, that hotel, this hotel. I got servants, and they'll send it out finished. After all, didn't God promise me a lot of wealth? But I've understood everything in this world that God created was for His honor. It's not for my honor. The fact that I'm a multi-billionaire doesn't mean I spend it for myself. It's for God's honor. So Avram's figuring, let's think about God's honor right now. This is a fundamental, simple idea. Avram is teaching us, before he did anything in this world, before he decided on something, he said, Is this promoting God's honor or not? Now, this is not, we're going to call extra frumkeit. This is the first halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. This is basic Judaism. Okay? We're not talking about Chol Yisrael. We're not talking about having your hair covered all the way with it. We're talking about basic Yiddishkeit. Is what I'm going to do bring Kavod Shemayim or not? Kavod Shemayim is going to be honor of God or not? That's all I'm here for. He's my creator. I got no purpose unless it brings out His honor into this world. So now think about it. He goes down to Mitzrayim. He has no money. Now, people knew who Avram was. He was this one guy going against the whole world. There were rumors spreading like crazy. You know, who is this guy? Nimrod threw him into the thing. Did he survive? Or not? I don't know. Nimrod says yes. He says, yeah, whatever it is. He's the one guy, the lone dissenting voice. People know who he is. And the jury's still out on him. The majority was saying he's wrecking up everything. We were having a good time worshiping on the idols. And look what he did. He messed up his father's thing. He believes in this one God. What's going on over here? So now he goes down to Mitzrayim, broke. He goes to the Fleabag Hotel and says, "What's your?" And he writes in his name, "Sign him, please, Avram Avinu." Avram son of Terah. What? You're the man of God? The man of God in a hunger? God doesn't take care of him? Where's your God? Now, it's not Avram's fault, but the fact that he's walking through this situation, it's the greatest Chilul Hashem, the greatest desecration of God in the world has happened. And Avram has no choice. That might parenthetically explain, you know, why some commentaries say that Avram sinned by going down to Mitzrayim. They said he should have had more faith and not stay down. I would suggest something else. By going down, he created a big Chilul Hashem. But whatever, if it's a mistake or not, whatever. But Achil Hashem it was. If he wanted it to be Achil Hashem, didn't want it to be Achil Hashem, can you imagine, every night, he goes to another hotel, every night, they say, what? You're the man of God? You haven't got anything? And Avram say, you know, God, you know what's best for me. You know what you're doing. I don't know what you're doing. But obviously, there's a reason why I had to be here. I had to be in this hotel. I have to do this. And there's much we could talk about this. Because we'll see next week, Avram becomes the premier master of kindness. The premier master of hospitality. You know what? You can never, a person who's born wealthy can never be the premier master of kindness. You know why? Because they'll never know how a poor person feels. And as much as a rich person want to make a poor person feel better, they can't. Not because they're not nice, but until you've been in that person's shoes, you can't really know how to make them happy the way they should. You don't know the sensitivities. It's not possible. So parenthetically, Avram had to go through this to become the great Master of Chesed, to be on the other end. That's part of the divine plan. Avram may not have understood that at the time. But one thing he knows for sure, he, unfortunately, God has set him up to be a point of Chilul Hashem. So now he's coming down to Egypt. He's coming down to Egypt, and he's saying, you know, you think he forgot about that Chilul Hashem? That's weighing heavy on his mind. For a whole week, I did a Chilul Hashem every night. Everyone thinks that God, the man represents God. I've not brought God any honor into this world. And now I have to go down to Paro now. And things can get a lot worse now. Can you imagine if he's going to take you and kill me? What's going to happen? So I have to make a plan. So he makes this plan. But part of the plan is I'm going to get money. Now you understand. What does he need money for? Why is he so money grubbing? He knows I ain't staying in Mitzrayim for long. I mean, I've got to come back. I got to come back with money. I got to come back and pay those debts. If I don't pay those debts, it's going to be a major Chilul Hashem. So now you understand why there's money on his mind. Everyone looks at his people, his wife's life is in danger. He's thinking about money. What's his wife's life worth if not for Kvod Shemayim? Any less than the Chilul Hashem he just made before. So he can't just be worried about his wife. He's worried about his wife. For sure he's worried about his wife. And he's a plan. But, you know, while I'm here, you know, I got to find a way to get some money because I got to get money. And without money, I can't undo the Chilul Hashem. And then Hashem gives him all kinds of money. And he gets really wealthy. And now when he leaves, he now realizes, if you look carefully in the Pasuk, the English isn't going to help you a lot. It says in source 6, it says, now Avram was very laden with livestock. He was kaved. Now the Hebrew word isn't laden. The Hebrew word is kaved. What does kaved mean? Literally. Heavy. Now is that the way you talk? He was heavy with money? That's not the way you talk. So the answer is, what's the gematria of kaved? Kaved is spelled chaf, vez, dalad. 26. That same gematria is Hashem Hashem. Yud, hey, vav, hey. He says, I may have a lot of money, but all this money is to, first of all, kaved is the same root as kavod. All this money only has one purpose. Kaved shemayim. I look at money to serve me only one purpose. How does this glorify God in this world? Finished. Second interpretation, the other side of the coin. And therefore, and I look, so what do I really need all this money for? I need this money, A, to pay back my debts. And B, when I'll have money, as we'll see in a minute, I'll be able to have a lot of guests. And of course, if I can have hospitality, I can teach them about God. And that's what I need the money for. As we know, when people came to visit Avram, they said to Avram, okay, thank you very much. Avram says, what are you thanking me for? He says, well, of course, you gave me the food. He says, what are you thanking me? Where do you think I got it from? I got it from God. I will want you to thank God. So he says, okay, how do I thank God? I'll teach you how. Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech olam, hazon es olam, kulo b'tuvo. Look at what those words are saying. Bless you, God, King of the universe. That's already a great insight for those heathens. Hazon es olam, kulo b'tuvo. You sustain the world with all your kindness. He's teaching them benching. Benching is one of the highest philosophies of Judaism. You can't do that without money, can you? And what about a person who says, you know, I don't want to thank God. Someone says, okay, you want to thank God? Then pay me. He says, I'll pay you. Okay, how much did the steak dinner cost? First of all, a glass of water, $500. Steak, $1,000. Service, $1,000. So what? What's going on here? It's the middle of the desert, man. Where are you going? Anywhere else? So you know what? I'll thank God and said, thanks, let me teach you how. So what do I need the money for? You know what? And the other interpretation, kaved, means was heavy. It's heavy, really heavy. You know, that's like this. If let's say you love money. Better example. Woman has jewelry, right? There's some pieces of jewelry that are heavier than other pieces of jewelry, right? Does any woman, you know, let's say if you have a choice, ladies, you can have a 1-carat diamond or a 20-carat diamond. Which would you prefer? You prefer the 20-carat diamond, right? But it's heavier. What do you mean? I like it. Okay, how about if I put, a ball and chain connect to you. Shackles. A 1-pound shackle or a 10-pound shackle? Which would you prefer? The 1-pound shackle. Why? If something's a burden, the more it weighs, the more it's a burden. Something's an ornament, then it doesn't matter to you at all. The heavier, the nicer the ornament. It's focused, right? So money. A lot of money takes a lot of time to deal with it. If you have money for your sake, it's for you, then it doesn't feel heavy at all. Oh, Nebuchadnezzar, I have $50 million. I don't know how I'm going to transfer all that money. I got to schlep $50 million from Toronto to New York in small unmarked bills. That's such a headache. Baruch Hashem, I have such a headache. But Avram, he looked at the money as kaved. It was a load. It was a load because I don't need it. It's a load. It's a load in terms of my own selfish needs. Who needs it? But it's kaved, 26. But it can give kavod to Hashem. And for that, I'm willing to schlep a load for the kavod of Hashem. See, if you live for kavod shemayim, how do you look at money? So that's how he looked at money. He understood the whole purpose of money was just for that. And that's what he did. That was his whole life, was kavod shemayim. And everything he did. So now it begins to make a lot of sense. As you see, we'll put it all together. But now you understand why he took the money? You understand why he took the money? Fine. We'll come back to Stone in a moment. Just finish up a few loose ends over here. So, when he had lots of guests, do you think the guests he had were such pleasant people to be with? Can you imagine, like these uncouth heathen Arabs were your guests? Can you imagine, when you have guests at your Shabbos table, what kind of guests do you want to have at your Shabbos table? Oh, you know, a guest rabbi comes in, you want him to be in your house. A nice family comes to your house, right? But what about the people who are just obnoxious people? Who don't believe in Hashem and they, you know, they have poor manners and this and that. And you're going to give them the best of everything? Oh, what a waste. What did Avram need this for? He says, you know, I need this. It's called Kavod Shemayim. If one more person will recognize a God in this world, it's for God's covet. It's nothing to do with me. It's nothing to do with me. Everything I did to get the money was just for these people. And now I go back. So give action. He goes back to these hotels now. And he says, here, I'm coming back to the hotel. He says, were you the same guy who was here a couple months ago? You were really poor. Wait. Yeah, and by the way, I got 75 oxen over there and 100 donks. I said, can you make sure there's people? What happened? He says, you know, God blessed me. What do you mean God blessed you? Well, Paro gave it to me. What? Paro gave it to you? Paro's the stingiest guy in the world. They just kill everybody, get rid of them. And he tells the whole story. Oh, wow. Oh boy, your God must be pretty powerful after all. That's why he had to pay back the debt. There was a double debt he had. There was a financial debt and a spiritual debt he incurred. He incurred a spiritual debt by the Chil Hashem, by being a poor man. He said, I gotta undo that then, not just by sending a check for $29.95. I guess I'm gonna go there and be there, and they're gonna see the whole story. And this is where the turnaround begins. You know, Hashem says, do this, it'll be good. But Hashem tests him right away. It was very bad. He was expecting Canaan, he got Canaan. And now all of a sudden, now he was the lowest. All of a sudden Hashem, whoo, showers him with all this wealth. He comes back and says, listen where this came from. Ah, now you're going to learn that even though something appears to be bad, that's the way Hashem sets it up to be really good. Ooh, wow, you have an amazing God. And even all that wealth, why did you come to us? Why didn't you go to the Hilton? You know why? Because you believe there's a God in the world, you don't have to be money grubbing. You don't have to say, now that God gave me more money, I have to change my lifestyle. If my lifestyle was good before I got wealthy, it's good enough now. Because money is kaved. For me, it's kaved. For God, it's kavod. And that's why I go to you to teach it derech eretz. Whew, he blows them away. And that's all life. It's just teaching people derech eretz, pirkei avos, kavod shemayim. That's his whole life. And therefore, although you may think things he does is contradictory, no. When kavod shemayim says this, you do this. And when kavod shemayim says you do that, you do that. So therefore, what does kavod shemayim dictate? After he wins the war and defeats Sodom, and now someone wants to give him lots of money. What does Kavod Shemayim say? Take the money or not take the money? Kavod Shemayim says they're going to think you did it as a mercenary. You got involved in the war to become richer. So I did not get involved in the war to get richer. I raised my hand up as if to say, even though my hand could say it was my power, but I say my hand was all from Hashem. And since it was for Hashem, we'll see in a minute why he gets involved in the war at all. But I have nothing with the money. I don't need the money. I'm already a rich man. I have enough money to do the kiruv I need to do. Now if I'm going to take it, it will be a detraction of Kavod Shemayim. Then I'm not going to take the money. Do you see the difference? That's what decides what he does. Now, one more little thing we have to add. I still got 12 minutes. Nimrod. If Avram represented Kavod Shemayim, there's one person who represented the exact opposite of Kavod Shemayim. And that's what you find in source number 9, where it says about Nimrod, that he was a mighty hunter, lifnei Hashem, before Hashem. Which the rabbis explain, he was a rebel. So, you know, yeah, just press it again. Is the red thing up?
It's recording, yeah.
Yeah. So what does it mean when it says Nimrod was lifnei Hashem, before Hashem? Really, before is a strange word. It should have said against Hashem, keneged Hashem. Why say lifnei Hashem? So it's a long talk, but very simply, Nimrod, he knew about Hashem, but you could rebel against Hashem, and that means, you know, I don't want to do what you say. Stam is a Russia. No, you tell me this, I don't want to do it. That would be rebelling, that would be going against Hashem. You're going before Hashem is a big difference. So you know what? Said, God, you think you're God? Not only am I not going to listen to you, but I'm going to tell everybody that I'm God. Not that I don't listen to you, but you listen to me. In other words, the whole world was created for my honor, not for your honor. The total antithesis. Remember, everything in the spiritual world has to have polaric extremes. Aram is the polaric extreme of everything is for God's honor. Nimrod isn't just, I'm a rush, I don't listen to Hashem. Everything is not for God's honor. Everything is for my honor. So there I'm going to teach the whole world that I am God. And those powers that I believe in are most powerful. If you think you're God, that's not just not giving Hashem covet, then you're totally turning the whole thing on its head. Covet is for me. And these are the extreme personalities that exist in this world that we have to choose which kind of person we want to be. Do you want to be the person everything you do is for Hashem or everything you do is for myself? Now, since Nimrod was that way, now therefore, if anybody still believed in God, that would upset Nimrod greatly. It's an interesting medrash that tells us that one time Nimrod got lost in the desert, and he was dying, and he's looking for some kind of, haven, and guess where he stumbles? He stumbles into Avram's tent in the middle of the desert, Avram's hotel. And, you know how Avram ran the hotel. He wasn't right in front and taking registration. He didn't even know who the owner was. People just came. They knew it was a free hotel. They just went in. So the neighbor stays there a few days. So then all of a sudden, Avram sees him. And he sees Avram. And then he's having a little discussion. And so Avram says, I see you took advantage of my hotel over here. He says, yeah, you know. And you think that you're a big god over here. I think I'm a god, yeah. Yeah, but I heard that everything's for free over here. But if you really want, I'll pay you. So Avram says, okay, I want you to pay. I'd like you to pay me $25 million. He says, what? $25 million? Yeah, that's been the expenses since I've opened up this hotel. $25 million. Every guest I've had, I've added up, it's $25 million. You're crazy. Why should I pay $25 million? So I'll tell you why. Because all those people who wanted to thank me, right? Remember? You want to thank me? I said, thank God. I have a God who supports me. You wanted to pay me? I said, you don't have to pay. If you pay, you can't afford to pay me. Just thank God. Because God supplies everybody. And I was telling them, for the last $25 million, I've been telling people that God's been supplying the $25 million. Well, you say that you're God. So you say that you're God, then obviously you can give me $25 million. I said, that's not possible. Okay, you know what? I admit, I'm not God. Write it down on paper. Writes it down on paper. And Avram did the ultimate coup on Nimrod. He proved to him right in front of his face, he ain't God, and he had to admit it. That and other activities got Nimrod awfully upset. Because now Avram is beginning, now the balance is shifting. Remember, last week's parsha, Nimrod builds the Tower of Babel, right? He thought he's going to make himself the God. Well, God took care of that one. But I can still recover. I can still come back, right? He's trying to come back. And that's part of the wars now with the four kings and the five kings. As we'll see in 1 second. But now, you see, Nimrod's losing his grip. Because Avram all of a sudden is promoting this monotheism business over here. And now Avram's kind of caught him. So now things come full circle. What is the whole purpose of this war? What was the purpose of this war? Two purposes. Purpose number one. If Nimrod, by peaceful means, couldn't go against God, because God just wrecked it up, he says, I'm going to have another way to prove that I'm God. And he created a new concept that never before was heard in the annals of world history. And that was called war. There was no such thing as war before. Nobody would have the chutzpah to think that they could subjugate another person before another person. Because that only is God's domain. No matter how idolatrous they were, nobody had this insight to go to war and subjugate people to you. Who would think of this idea? The person thinks the whole world was created for me. He thinks he's God and nobody else is God. So therefore, the whole purpose of World War I and World War II was to Nimrod to promote the whole world was created for my honor and not for God's honor. And therefore, it's not just a question of Sodom and Amorah. But you know what? On the second time around, any other puny country along the way, I'll make them all subjugated to me. And that's indeed what he does to each and every one of them. Now he'd beat every country in the world. That's good enough for him. He may not be able to make a tower. God won't let him do that. But if I can control the world as the general and through military means, I have now, everyone's in the image of God and I've conquered everyone in the image of God. Everything in the world was created for God's honor, right? Right. Guess what? I went and conquered the whole world. And now they all pay tribute to me. So everything in this world now is for my honor. That was the point of the war. Now this is all happening at the same time where this one person, Avram, is trying to teach the whole world everything is for God's honor. They're heading for a collision course. Avram wins the first round. He says, go pay the $25 million. The whole world cheers. And I can't. Okay, I guess you're not a God. So Nimrod says, okay, now I've got to do a few more things. He's got to do a few more things. So what does Nimrod, besides this whole war, to do all this? This is the whole idea of the war. But let's look at source number 10. When Avram and Lot were fighting with each other, I mean, Avram wasn't fighting, but the shepherds were fighting. So what does he say? So Avram said to Lot, please let there be no strife between me and you and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, because we are men who are brothers. Back to that brothers. What does Rashi say there? That Gadic message says their faces looked similar. Now, Rashi could have gotten away easy and just said, brothers means relatives, finished. You know, brothers, relatives. Why is it wrong that I got an interpretation? Our faces look similar. What does that add to the text? What do I care? The answer is, And why is Avram so particular? I'm making peace right now because look what's happening to Kavod Shemayim. Lot looked just like Avram. Now, can you imagine? Lot's servants, how did the fight begin? Lot's servants say, you know, you can graze in anybody's field. You know, one day we're going to conquer it anyway. We could steal. No, I could take the sheep to private fields. It's not a big deal. Now, what are people seeing with their eyes? They're seeing Lot, who looks like Avram. They're seeing Avram letting his shepherds steal. That's not Kavod Shemayim. Look what's having Kavod. Even though Avram didn't do anything, I didn't do anything. But I got someone who looks just like me. Who's stealing? I was going to say, Avram's stealing. We can't have this. We don't have enough room for gold. Go find the nicest place. You can stop doing this. That's what he's saying over here. It's a lack of Kavod Shemayim. So everybody goes to another place. And Avram did not suggest going to stone, because that's not a good place to go. Lot fools Avram, goes another place, but then backtracks and goes to stone. Aha. Now, Stom is supposed to be paying tribute to Nimrod. They are controlling Nimrod. So now Nimrod says, we're going to battle. And we got a number of agendas. Number one, we conquer the whole world has to honor me. But number two, if no Lot lives there, we capture him, it looks like we captured Avram, the man of God. And that's what the Pusik, now you understand very well when the Pusik says, when they captured Lot, let's go back to that question. And they captured Lot and his possessions, Avram's nephew. The real possession wasn't the money. They captured Lot and his possession. The real possession, the prize, was that he was what? Avram's brother. Lot Achiv. Avram's Achiv. That he looked like Avram. That was the possession. You understand what the pasuk is saying? They went and captured Lot. I'll read it inside in the Hebrew. It comes out better than in the English. It says they came. It says Vayichus Lot. They captured Lot. Ves Rechusho and his prize. What was that? Ben Achi Avram. He was the nephew of Avram. That was the prize. That's what they were going for. Because now that they capture Avram, Lot looks like they captured Avram, and all the news have got pictures. CNN's got pictures of Avram being captured. Aha! See, now Lot really—he took down his adversary. And now it's very good when Avram heard what? It was when Avram heard, Kinishpa Achiv. His brother was captured. And how did Rashi explain brother in the last chapter? The one who looked just like him. Since he's the one who looked like Justin, who got captured. Now he says, this is the ultimate Chil Hashem. I was worried you're going to be, your animals will be grazing fields and aren't there as a Chil Hashem. But now Nimrod went and captured you. That's the ultimate Chil Hashem. So now, Og knows, you know, everyone knows what Avram is. He's the man for Kavod Shemayim. He don't do things for God. So Og knows, if they've captured Lot, and it looks like Avram, Avram doesn't have a choice. He's going to go to battle. And if you live your life only for Kavod Shemayim, do you care what the results are? And if you die, then it's Kavod Shemayim. Avram said, I can't lose. There's no reason why not to do it. Number one, if I win, I win. For sure it's good. If they kill me, the one thing's for sure, everyone's going to know when they were masquerading with Lot, it wasn't me. They can't masquerade with him anymore. And if they capture me, it's at least me and not Lot. The bottom line is, where do we get more Kavod Shemayim? By me doing nothing or by me doing something? If I do nothing, it is clearly not Kavod Shemayim, because the whole world is saying I've been captured. I go to battle, I could die, but it's Kavod Shemayim because it's not in my best interest. It's in Hashem's. There's a chance I'll win. A. B. If I get killed, I'm going to get a big hero's a funeral, and they're going to know this was a joke from before. They could never capture me. It's at least better than capturing me. And maybe, yeah, it'll turn out bad, but you got to do something to prove that. Someone lives for Kavod Shemayim, does not care about his interest at all, and that's, Og knew that clearly, and that's exactly what Avram had to do. So now, really, Lot, this whole World War I, I'm just giving you the context, World War I and II was really what? A war against Hashem. It was a war against saying, instead of saying the whole world's created for God's honor, the whole world's created for Nimrod's honor. And the real rechush, real bounty, treasure was getting someone to look just like Avram. Alright, now, what about the other soldiers? What about his comrades? Why didn't his comrades come? The answer is, Avram surely kept the whole Torah before the Torah was given. What happens when a Jewish army goes to battle? What's the thing you do right before the troops go out to battle? The priest goes out and says, anybody who is afraid to go to battle because of sins they have done should not go out to battle. So Avram, of course, if he's fighting a battle of Kavod Shemayim, he has to go through all the whole thing. Okay, we're fighting a battle now for the honor of God. The honor of God, you'll have no chance of winning if you're not doing this for the sake of God. So let's see if any people are afraid of the sins they have here. Honor Eshkol Mamre said, we'd love to help you, but we know we have sins. We can't fight the way you fight. We'll take care of the supply lines, but we can't go out to battle. So not that they didn't want to fight, but this was a Kavod Shamayim battle. Kavod Shamayim battle, not everybody go. But one person did. Who? Eliezer. Why Eliezer? Because he got it. Eliezer, even though he's a Chamite, a cursed Chamite, he knew one thing. You know what? I know one thing. That I'm come from a cursed dynasty, and that's from my family. Frankly, Nimrod was from that stock too. Said, I see what Nimrod could do, you know. I figured, you know, I may not be a Jew, I may not be Avram, but if God created the whole world for his honor, and Avram is doing everything for God's honor, you know, the only resonant answer I can have is subjugating myself to Avram. And Eliezer realized, he's the guy for me to hang around with. And he totally was the Eved. He represented exactly what it meant to be a Shamash. And then, did Avram need him? Of course Avram didn't need him. He could have done it by himself. He wanted to teach the rest of the world. You know what? The rest of you, you may not be me, but you could be like Eliezer. You have a purpose too. Not everyone's going to be an Avram. No, you're not going to be like me. But if you can't be on my level, at least be on a level to be my loyal servant. If you're the servant of the one who serves God, then you're also okay. See, Eliezer didn't help a darn. But he wanted everybody to learn, but you could all be like Eliezer. You can't be like Avram. You can't be like Avram. But the rest of the world, you could be like Eliezer at least. He'll be part of that as well. Okay? So now, and what happens? He wins the war. Look how it all ends up. It ends up the greatest Kiddush Hashem in the world. He goes to battle. He says, what are we going to do? Eli says, what are we going to do? He says, you know what? Don't worry. Hashem mutitzach neitzah. Here, let's take some sand. They take some sand. Maybe he says some mystical incantations. He throws the sand. It turns into arrows, and they win the war like that. Some may contend, if you want to make it a little more plausible, maybe Hashem gave him the insight to invent dynamite. Maybe. You could say he invented dynamite. Hashem gave him a mind. You know, you do this, it'll explode. Maybe. It doesn't matter. Either way, it was beyond what Avram could do himself. But he threw things. You could say, well, that's a cute story. But you got to realize, this was such a famous story, that over 1,000 years later, when Nochemish Gamzu was told to go to Rome, and I'm not going to tell the whole story, so to go to Rome to bring a big chest of gold, and on the way, an innkeeper switched it with sand. And then when he comes to the Roman emperor, he brings sand. The Roman emperor wants to kill him. Eliyahu Navi comes in like one of the Roman senators and says, wait a minute, maybe it's like the sand that Avram used in his battle. The Roman emperor says, let's try it. What do you mean, let's try it? He said, how did the Roman senator know about this? It was well documented historically. You understand? If the Talmud has a story 1,000 years later, maybe it's the sand from Avram. It means everybody knew about this story. Can you imagine now Avram wins the war? He wins against the most powerful army in the world. And it ended up with Kavod Shemayim. So now when he comes back from battle, and look, he's going back, and guess what he sees? He sees that the king of Sodom is breathing his last breath. He's in the sinkhole. He still hasn't gotten out of there. So Ramban explains, look at Ramban. Ramban says, Avram went over him and says, by the power of God, I want you to come out. Everybody was with him there. He said, by the power of God, I want you to come out. He comes out because Avram gets him out. Now you understand why Rashi said, why Hashem saved him. It wasn't just another God saving him. It was Avram. After Avram wins the war, and after Avram now has got Kavod Shemayim big time, he goes over to, the only one who could maybe argue with this would be the king of Sodom. I just want you to know, you're coming out because of God. Ooh, now we're all going to believe what happened when you were saved by the fiery furnace, that God really is the one who does everything for you. And then when the whole world, now they make a big coronation, say, now Avram, you are the king of the world. You are the God of the world. Avram says, I'm sorry. I'm nothing more than the son. I did this all for Hashem. And that's how it ends. So you could look at the whole story and say, okay, you know, it turned out pretty good for Avram, eh? But let's think about this. And now let's come back to the original two questions. I think it's all pretty clear. All the questions are answered. It all fits in. Oh, by the way, one little detail I should have mentioned. When it said, I'm Raphael, in the one thing you got to say, but Rabbi, you don't see the name Nimrod in the whole Parsha. So just to cover my bases, source A, it says, I'm Raphael was the name of the king. Rashi says, he is Nimrod who said to Avram, fall into the furnace. Avraham, pull, fall down. He was the one who threw him in the furnace. Why does Rashi tell us so? I'm Raphael is Nimrod because he threw him in the furnace? Because this was the whole point of the war. The instigator was I'm Raphael. Why did he call him Nimrod? Because it wasn't just the old Nimrod. It was the new, the I'm Raphael, the guy who threw Avram into the pit because he wanted to get Avram. He wanted to get low. So Nimrod was the whole time here. If you look in the parts, you don't see the name Nimrod once. Where did Nimrod come from? Rashi tells you, it's Nimrod. So now you understand what he was doing over there. So now let's come back to the original two questions. We said it was a big test. It was a big test. How can it be a big test? Hashem is promising him all these things. If Hashem is promising you all these things, how can it be a big test? So the Sfas answers beautifully. He asks one other question. Listen carefully. It says, Vayomer Hashem al Avram. Hashem said to Avram, Lech Lecha. Okay? And I'll give you this. Then it says, Vayelech Avram went kasher diber elav Hashem. As Hashem spoke to him. Now we all know there's a big difference between the word Vayomer and Vayedaber. Vayomer is a soft way of speaking. Vayedaber is a strong way of speaking. Vayomer isn't that nice, please, it's nice, this, you know. Vayedaber, it's a command. It doesn't make sense. It says, Vayomer Hashem al Avram. Hashem said to Avram. And it says, and Avram went, kasher diber elav, which is kasher amar elav. So the Sfas says an outstanding answer. He says, Hashem said, first Hashem, you know, it's a big test. Hashem wants to make it easy. He wants to code it a little bit. He says, listen, I know it's going to be hard, but I'm telling you, you're going to have a great name, lots of family, wealthy. This was Amir. He gave him soft, he soft-pedaled it. You know, you're going to get a lot of good out of it. Now here's the test. The test is, so why did Avram do it? Did he do it because of the promises that Hashem gave him? So the Sfasema says, no. He went kashir diber elav Hashem, as Hashem told him strongly. In other words, what Avram understood is Hashem told him to do something, there's two levels I can understand it. On the one level, whatever you do for Hashem ultimately is going to be good for you. But the real reason you do it is because you're a servant. You're a servant. When you're a servant, everything's in order. Even if he candy coats it, it's in order. So by Yomer Hashem, Hashem candy coated it to make it easier for him to absorb it, because it's on first test, it's going to be hard. Hashem can't, you know, bowl him over with it. But Aaron says, you think I'm doing it because I'm going to be wealthy? You think this matters to me? The world is covered Shemaim. That was the test. Hashem would say, I'm going to give you everything. And you know why? Because it's going to be really good for you. That was the test. He said, oh great. I mean, it's going to be good for me, something for me? That was the test. Hashem said, I hope he doesn't say, you're going to give it for me? Then it's a good idea. Then I'm going to do it. Then he would have failed the test. Passing the test as he went, kasher diber. Behind the Amira was a dibor. Behind the Amira is really you're supposed to do it for Kavod Shemaim. Is that why you're going or not? I'm not going to force you, but I'm going to tell you there's a lot of benefits. Are you going to be fooled by that expression? Avram wasn't fooled away. So there's only one reason I really do it, because you're the boss and it's my greatest pleasure to serve you. And I do it as a command, not because I'm going to get any benefits from it. And once he did that, that expresses his whole gestalt for the whole parsha. Now you understand, if I'm doing it because Hashem told me to do it, and the greatest honor I can do is to serve Hashem, and that's what I'm all about. Who cares about the money? Who cares about this? You know what? And then all that money I have, then it's only one purpose. It's for you and not for me. And that's what comes out through the whole parsha. And with this, we can answer the final question, the last point, and this is the most beautiful point. Most beautiful point. I won't have time for the story. We'll have to leave it for another time. We said, why did I have to say Avram was 75 years old? Who cares how old he was? So one of the commentaries says like this, beautiful pshat. The Malbim says, as a pasuk of Mishlei says, "Ushnos chayim v'sholom yosifu," years of life and peace Hashem will add. So he asks, what's the idea of years of life? Are there years of death? Shnos chayim, years of life. Of course there's years of life. How can there be years of death? So he answers, the truth of the matter is, life in God's eyes is only determined if a person does the will of Hashem. If a person learns Torah and does mitzvahs and lives properly, that's called life. If you don't do that, that's not called life. And the Gemara says, Rishoyim, Afilu B'chayim, Nikra Mesim. Rishoyim, when they're alive, they're dead. Life means you're doing things that are meant to, the way you're living for the reason you were created. That's life. Every day you live for the reason you're created, that's life. So now, it comes out, so what if you live certain days not for the reason you were created? It's dead. Well, the Gemara says like this, look how amazing tshuva is. Tshuva extends the years of a person. So the question is, what do you mean extends the years of a person? How is that possible? Why is that so? So it's understood if you look at the next line of the Gemara. Gemara says, look how great tshuva is, that all intentional sins turn into unintentional sins. Okay, then the Gemara says, wait a minute, there's another rabbi says, it turns intentional sins into mitzvahs. How do you resolve it? The answer is, well, it depends. If you do tshuva out of fear, it turns the intentional to unintentional. If you do it out of love, it turns into mitzvahs. Aha, but wait a minute, I don't understand something. So let's say I was not about tshuva until I was 50. Now I'm about tshuva when I'm 50. What about the first 50 years of my life? For 50 years of my life, the mom would say I was dead. Because I didn't live a Torah life. I was dead. Now I'm going to start to live. Okay, now I'm going to start to live. What about the past? And that's always a question. If I was all about tshuva, what about my past? Depends on your tshuva. If you do tshuva out of fear, that means the past was the past. I don't want Hashem to punish me. And from now on, things are going to be better. You're right. The past is not. Now, the intentional is unintentional. unintentional sin still isn't that great. You just don't get hit, but you've had a wasted life. If you chew out of love, it turns the averos into mitzvahs, which means retroactively, the first 50 years of your life were mitzvahs. How that happens, I don't have the time to get into that right now. I need another hour to explain that, but that's the rule. Do tshuva out of love, it transforms the past into mitzvahs. That's an amazing miracle. That means the first 50 years of life that you wasted, you do tshuva out of love, all of a sudden those 50 years come back to life. It's tchias amesu. You have 50 years of life. And that's what Gemara means. It says you extend your years. Once you've done tshuva, it extends your years. So now let's think about this for a minute. Avraham Avinu was about tshuva at what age? Either the age of 3 or most likely the age of 48. Probably at 3 was beginning to think about it. 48, he mamash became Shomer Shabbos and completed. So 45 years it took him to do tshuva properly. So now Aaron's 48 years old. Now he's doing what Hashem wants. He's talking about God. He's doing this and all these amazing things. But what about the first 48 years of his life? He didn't live the first 48 years of his life. So now this is what Hashem is so kind to Aaron. He says, you know, you've shown me you believe there's a God in this world. But it could very well, it's intellectual, it's more out of fear, etc. But I don't know if you really love me. So I'll tell you what, let me give you the 10 tests. Let's start with the very first test. You know, if you really love me, you know, you're doing a great job where you're at, Aaron, please leave. Go where I tell you. Where are we going? I'm not going to tell you. Now, what does Hashem say about the Jewish people? Kol Amar Hashem, Zacharti Lo Chesed Nureich. I remember Jewish people, the chesed of our youth, that I told you to go to the desert, the place you didn't know where you were going. You showed your love for me. Right? Jews went to the desert, they didn't know where they were going. Where did they learn to do that from? Learned it from Avram. Avram said, go into Israel, go into the desert. Where? I don't know. Now, you know, you don't go with somebody, you don't know where they're going unless you really love them. And more than that, Shem says, I'm going to give you money, I'm going to give you this, I'm going to give you that. And what does Avram say? I'm doing because you told me to do it. No ulterior motives. What does that mean? Avram, for the first time in his life, is bona fide showing Hashem, I love you. This is tshuva. This is coming back to Hashem out of love. He was with Hashem for the last 27 years. He was fighting for Hashem and saying, yes, we have to believe in God and this and that. And we don't know if he loves God. He was intellectual, understands. He was a God. Fine. You're a fear. You have to believe in God. How do I love him? I love him because Hashem's saying, do you love me to the point that everything is for my honor? Everything created is for my honor? Ah, you love me for that. You do it for my honor? That means you love me. Guess what, Avram? Now that I, and so, see, look carefully, right? What does the pasuk say? You see now, psukim are beautiful. It's the beginning of the parsha. This is the whole theme of the whole parsha. Again, Hashem says to him, I said, Vayomer Hashem, Hashem makes it soft. Look, you go do it, you're gonna get this, and I'm soft pedaling it all. And then what does it say? And Avram goes, as Hashem spoke to him, he said, I'm not going for those reasons. I'm going as you told me. Because the whole world is for your honor. That's why I'm going. And then what does it say in the middle of that pasuk? And Avram was 75 years old. Meaning to say, now he became 75 years old. Because all the years before, through his tshuvah of love, became mitzvahs, and now he indeed lived 75 full years. Until this, we could say it's 27. He ain't 75. 48 years were dead years. 27 years were alive. Now that he passed the test, he was 75 years old. So how do you come to that? Only because Hashem pushed him. Can you imagine if Hashem wouldn't have tested Avram? Avram's whole life would have served God out of fear. And the first 48 years would have been lost. Hashem, I love you too much, Avram. And I have to show you how much you love me. And I'm going to put you in a situation, I'm going to force you to show your love for me. And by you showing that you do everything for Kavod Shemayim, that shows you have love for me and that a person lives an entire life. That's an incredible way to begin the Avos. And that's the Avos. That's Pirkei Avos. Everything Hashem created in the world was for His honor. And Avram lived by that every minute. So when we do certain activities, mitzvahs, we have to be careful. Is the mitzvah we're doing it is because it's for God's honor? Or is it for my honor? The implications are incredible in terms of what one does for one's life. And we certainly have a tremendous patriarch to teach us this. And God should help us to be able to live up to that bracha that He gives us. Okay, Shkaya. I had a great story, but that's already too late. It's already way beyond.